Hello guys, welcome to the Blackspin Global Podcast. I am Lucy.
And I'm Eugene.
And welcome to another great episode. Eugene, how are you doing?
I'm good. Not as good as you though. So again, another congratulations. Last pod, it was the best-selling author.
The cookbook. best-selling author.
This week, it's Driver. Congratulations.
Yes, sir.
Throw away that green license, get that pink one. But yeah, congrats.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. So if anyone wants to PayPal me some money so I can buy a car, I don't know what to do. Just holler at me and I'll give you my PayPal.
But no, I'm all good. Working this bank holiday weekend, which is a bit annoying, but
I can imagine.
It's all good. Weather's like, it's nice weather outside. There's a lot of tennis on, so
yeah,
it's all good. What about you? How are you?
Tired, you know, as you can see, I'm in here in bed, podding, you know, but I've been working hard. This week, it's been very productive. I feel like things being back to normal, quote unquote, is making me really productive. So, yeah.
That's good. That's good to hear. Well, yeah, man, let's get into it. So, obviously, as we record this, Madrid's going on. So, the Madrid Masters on the men's side, WTA 1000 on the women's side, but as we start each show, we're going to do a quick roundup anyway. So yeah, when we were last on, actually, we previewed Barcelona, that Rafa Nadal ended up winning. I think it was his, was it 13th?
Oh my gosh, that match was
the final against Tsitsipas.
It was against Tsitsipas. Like, I know this is Blackspin Global, but I can't tell you how Tsitsipas should have won that.
Because it was three sets, wasn't it? Yeah.
It was three sets. Like, anyone who watched that match cannot tell me. Like, it was Nadal won that by luck. Like, no one can tell me otherwise. Like, Tsitsipas was really, like, you know, but Nadal, whenever Tsitsipas was literally nearly there, Nadal just has some instant automatic weirdly boost, and then he'll go back down and he'll go back up, and then he won the match.
It's the clay, yeah, there's no one
that's
like
the thing him. Yeah, but it was a very good final though. It was a very, very, very good final. I really enjoyed it. I like when I just love it when you have a good match. That's what it is.
And like, for the final, exactly, like, it's kind of meant to be.
Exactly, so. Yeah, it was a very good one. It was better than I expected, to be fair. But
from a Blackspin perspective, so Felix ended up reaching the quarterfinals, and he lost to Tsitsipas, which again was no kind of mean feat, and that was a straight sets defeat. But en route to the quarterfinal, he did get some good wins. So I thought the win against Massetti was a pretty good win, because he lost the first set and then just pretty much.
That's why I wasn't too gutted that he lost at the quarterfinal to Tsitsipas, because Tsitsipas on clay is really, really good.
He is, he's solid. And then in the
and he was doing, I think he won, didn't he not win the tournament before Barcelona, something like that?
Yeah, Monte Carlo.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a pretty, like, it's not like he lost to a small, you know, person. Like, he lost someone that, you know, that was already doing really well on clay and stuff.
And
so,
then
yeah,
after the Massetti match, he took out Shapovalov in straight sets, which was a good performance from Felix. Like, and he already beat Shapovalov in Australia.
Incredible. They've been playing. I feel like this is like their third match this year, isn't it?
I think they're second, but they played each other quite a lot already, considering they're quite young as well, which is pretty crazy. But
And apparently they're actually like proper friends and stuff.
Yeah, I tweeted, because obviously they grew up together being Canadian. I tweeted after saying like, I think Felix has like a psychological edge over Shapovalov. Like, and I think that kind of, obviously we all know tennis is a very like mental game. But exactly. I think when you have like a slight edge mentally over an opponent, that can kind of carry you over the line, like,
definitely
in a lot of ways. So yeah, shout out to Felix. Francis Tiafoe was also in the draw, so he beat Carlos Alcaraz in straight sets in the first round. And that was a pretty good match, like, because Alcaraz is like literally the up and coming kid everyone's talking about, like, in Spain. And again, I thought that was a pretty good win for Tiafoe. Played quite well. And then in the second round, he lost to Dennis Schwartzman, and that was a three set match. And TFO had opportunities to win that. It was a tough, it was a tough one to watch because he played so well like in the first set, and I wouldn't say he served for it in the second. I don't think he had match points, but he served for it in the second set, and then Schwartzman just came back. And I think Schwartzman was like the third seed, or he was quite highly seeded. So, and obviously being Argentinian, he's a clay court specialist as well. Kind of grew up on that surface. So, again, good performance from Francis. And Joe Wilfred Tsonga, he also played. He lost in the first round though to Gerasimov. And that was a straight sets defeat for Tsonga, but always good to see Tsonga like compete. So yeah, that was Barcelona. After Barcelona, so last week now, we had Estoril in Portugal, and it was just Francis Tiafoe competing in that. So he actually reached the final in 2018. But yeah, was unlucky for Francis again. He met Kevin Anderson in the first round. And it was a free set defeat for Tiafoe. And again, he had opportunities to win that match. So we kind of spoke as well, like off air, Lucy, about like how he was pretty disappointed after the defeat to Anderson. So yeah, that kind of wraps up the ATP stuff that was kind of happening before Madrid. The next person I want to like shout out and just kind of shine a light on is Sada. I want to say her name right. Nahimana. So she's a 20-year-old from Burundi. She trains at the Mouratoglou Academy, I think in Nice. So that's the one. Okay. Yeah, that's the south.
I mean, he has a lot of different that's academies now. You know, Patrick's getting them players.
Because I've actually seen some videos on Patrick's IG account of him. Of him like basically coaching her.
Specifically.
Yeah, okay.
Because like, I've seen different videos of his. Which after you finish talking about her, there's something I want to touch on Patrick real quick. Actually,
okay, interesting.
not in a bad way.
Oh, good. So yeah, Nahimana, she won the Antalya 15K event. It's an ITF event.
Yeah.
In Turkey, so she won both the singles and doubles. Which it was just a huge like achievement. In the single, she didn't drop a set, so literally she won every match straight sets. That was her second ITF title, I believe. I think her first title came in Nigeria, shout out. So yeah, she's got two singles titles or ITF titles to her name, and the doubles title was her first ever doubles title. And she won that title with an Australian, let me get her name right, Olivia Gadecki, that's it, who's also quite young. I think she's like 19. So yeah, they both won the doubles title in Antalya. And I just thought it was a great look. Like, obviously, it's not the WTA, but it's like literally the level just below. So Sada's definitely a name we should be looking out for like in the future. And she's 20, from Burundi, an African. Like, it's quite exciting.
Yeah.
So yeah, what did you want to say about Patrick?
No, there was this thing on Twitter where people were like debating about how, like, you know, like there was someone who literally just asked, does anyone actually like Patrick?
Oh God,
I was just like, why? God. And when I was reading the quote tweets, I realized that a lot of people were mentioning how they feel like he's using Serena, or like, you know, he's not just Serena alone, but all the other players, like whether it's Coco or Tsitsipas and whatnot, for like, you know, his own, you know, thing and whatnot. And then I feel like I was the only one that literally said, I actually do like him, because I just think it's a thing where people are not used of seeing a coach that's out there.
Yeah.
A lot of coaches are very, and I realize whenever they have a coach who speaks a lot, who's, you know, and at the end of the day, people are forgetting that Patrick has always been like that, even before he was even with Serena. People are forgetting that. I feel like his academy would have happened with or without her. Maybe it wouldn't have been as big. Serena and all these other players are definitely 100% a plus, and he knows it. But, you know, I feel like people just don't like the business bit. And I also mentioned one thing. I do think people are putting their frustration, the fans, like Serena fans, are putting their frustration on, you know, not hitting that 24, on Patrick.
Okay.
And it's like, all he can do is coach and help. Yeah, you get what I mean? That's
exactly what he's doing, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, Lisa, I don't like to get involved in, like, these kind of debates. Not debates, but, like, not to, like, sound demeaning, but, yeah, they're quite silly arguments, really and truly, because...
Mm.
Obviously he's a businessman, like he's his own kind exactly. of man, like, so it's not just, obviously he's Serena's coach, but yeah, he has other business interests, like, away from coaching Serena.
Facts.
I know
money he, if you make, that's exactly what
facts,
I said
exactly it, no exactly like he works quite closely with like Stefanos Tsitsipas as well, like obviously yeah. the Greek connection, mm-hmm. obviously Coco Gauff as well, Azarenka, like there's a lot of players like through his academy that he kind of works mm-hmm. for and like has a hand in, yeah, kind of helping them through their career. So
exactly, and it looks like he's working as well.
Completely. So I don't really have that much to say really about that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, no. Shouts out to Sada, and like I said, hopefully we see more of her, and we should be seeing her on a WTA tour very soon. Fingers mm-hmm. crossed. The next, I mean, let's leave Osaka until last. Quickly, vaccination. Some quick vaccination news.
Okay.
Gael Monfils, Le Monf.
Yeah,
had his,
I saw.
His, had his first shot. So.
Which is good, because I feel like a lot of the ATP players
yeah.
are more against it than anything else.
Weirdly, yes. It's so weird. Really, really
a
strange.
Lot of the ATP players, so seeing one getting it is really, really, really
and
good.
And like not to, again, because I hate talking about, like, well, yeah, COVID and stuff, but mm-hmm. from a black perspective, like, there is a lot of, what's the word, kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say ignorance, but like there's resistance.
No, there was.
There's
yeah,
resistance 100%. To the vaccine, and like for you know, valid reasons, basically. So to see someone like Gael Monfils, a pro tennis player, public figure, like, yeah, post on his, I think it was both Twitter and Instagram, that, yeah, I'm getting the jab. Like, it's a good look. Like, yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, everybody's entitled to have their feelings and, like, views on vaccines.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, there's mm-hmm. no, for me, there's no right or wrong way to look at it. I just think you need to just respect.
To me, as long as you're not being ignorant.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or giving a dumb, like saying, this is my issue with the people who are against it. Like, a lot of the things that they say is literally just dumb, ignorant stuff. Do you get what I mean? I feel like some of them even take it as a way to show that I'm not a sheep, I don't follow everyone.
It's mad. It's
but
so crazy.
Another thing as well is that a lot of these players, a lot of these people who are against it, they will, sooner or later, they're going to take it.
No, and this is the thing. I think it's going to become like a mandatory thing, and that sounds crazy.
The amount,
like,
exactly.
To even
I know.
Say that.
And I know that, you know, it's unfortunate, because at the end of the day, you should have the right to do what you want to do. But unfortunately, you guys are doing dumb shit. A lot of views who, like, a lot of these players, for example, who will not want to take it, will also not take precaution to make sure that they stay safe. If people could be trusted, if players could have been trusted to, okay, you're going to social distance, you're going to wear your mask, you're not, like, during tournaments, you're going to stay in the bubble, and whatnot. Yeah, but the issue is that they don't want to take that. They don't want to stay safe. So it's like, sometimes you guys are given no other choice. But I don't think they're going to be forced.
You don't?
I don't think so. Because even if the government itself can't really force you to take it, who is the ATP and WTA to force you to take it?
I think it's literally a thing, though, like, depending on where you are. Like, so...
I think so, yeah. So if there's one country, for example, where you can't... Like, for example, British... Okay, so British players, for instance, if, let's say, there was a tournament in Croatia, right, and they had to go there. Croatia, at the moment, you can't enter the country if you're British, if you're flying from the UK,
wow.
and you're not vaccinated.
Okay.
I don't know if it started yet, but they said that they were going to. Portugal's going to be the same. I think Greece as well. So that's the thing. It's getting complicated.
Yeah.
It's getting, like, you
and
know,
like, tennis is global.
But,
like, it's played all over the world. So, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know. I'll be really surprised if they force people, but I think they will definitely disturb them every day. I know someone where her workplace started offering the vaccine like since last year, and they've been chasing her since, because she says she's not against it, she just didn't want to take it yet. Yeah, she wanted to wait.
Which is fair enough.
Bit. Which is fair, exactly. Yeah, that's fine. But they've been like, she's saying they're really on my neck, and I feel like that's something that the WTA and ATP will do. What I do want them to do, however, is to reinforce a rule of the anti-vaxxers should just, because some of them do say a bit too much, and it's like you have a big, you know, platform and whatnot. So,
Lastly, I like the thing is, there's so much information out there. Like, but the thing is, there's a lot of like low level information, and that's the danger. Like, so,
and maybe WTA and ATP can contribute into that. Yeah. They should be doing campaigns with the players to show to them that, okay, this is what it is, blah blah blah. Because that's the number one issue with this vaccination is the misinformation or stuff. Like, you get some of them telling you like, oh, but you know, you can still catch it, and it's like, we know that, but the difference is that you're less likely going to die. You're less likely going to give it someone else. So yeah, let's just hope that this just, you know, sorts out well, and you know, by the end of the day, these players, depending on in each country, they're going to be, you know, following different rules, and it's either you follow those rules or you stay home.
Yeah, straight up.
But don't be like, what's his name, Benoit Paire, and be complaining. He's been complaining every single day, and it's like, don't be like him. Just follow the rules, or if rules are too much for you, just stay home. No one's forcing.
Yeah. No, I think that's well said. So yeah, next up, Naomi Osaka. She's been in the news a lot this week.
Do you know what? That's actually true. The past 2 weeks, she's been
Where do you want to start? Because you mentioned the skincare line. I think that's definitely very important.
Let's start with the positive.
Are you sure? I was going to go the other way. And this is the thing. I don't think it's necessarily a negative.
Actually, it's not even a negative. Exactly. Yeah, it's not a negative. It's a debate. It's not a negative. It's a debate. True. But actually, no, there's three things that she's been like a topic of.
I'm going to start the Breakfast Club thing.
You want to start the what?
Breakfast Club. So Dr. Umar.
Okay. Yeah. Let's start with the Breakfast Club.
So
cool.
Dr. Umar Johnson, who is like a clinical like psychologist, quite a controversial figure. Let's be real. Basically, he was on the Breakfast Club. I want to say it was probably, let's say, 2 weeks ago now.
But it was live a week ago, I think.
Yeah. So let's say last week then. He just basically said that Naomi Osaka, instead of representing Japan, she should represent Haiti, which is the country of her father's birth, or the birthplace of her father. Basically that kind of like caused a bit of a stir like on social media. Like I have my own views, and like I don't, when I was reading people's responses, I was like, damn, people need to chill. And the thing is, people were kind of losing their shit because of the person who said it, in terms of, it was because it was Dr. Umar, I think, anyway. And like kind of his views, like I said, they're quite controversial, like when it comes to like interracial dating and stuff like that. Because he's a pan-Africanist.
That makes sense. Right. Maybe people would be that angry if it was someone else.
And I did send you a video, a clip of him from his Instagram Live saying, oh, he just basically wants to clear things up this video gets released.
It's like he knew
So my thing is, obviously, Osaka was born in Japan. Like, so by kind of her right, like, yeah, she should represent Japan, like, and not should, she has every right to represent Japan because that's the country of her birth. But because her dad is from Haiti, there'll be no kind of, I would have no qualms if she said, you know what, I'm going to represent Haiti instead, because that's where my dad was born and I feel more culturally attached to Haiti. And this is a thing that happens quite a lot in football, for instance, or soccer, like for American listeners.
Okay, yeah.
Like a lot of footballers aren't necessarily born in the countries that they're playing for, internationally, but because they have like somewhere in their lineage, there's like a link to another country. They can represent that country basically if they haven't played for the country of their birth. So it's like, it's not like an unknown or like, I don't know, out of this world, like, for that to happen. Like it's quite a mm-hmm. normal kind of instance in pro sport, basically. What are your views?
Do you know what? I feel like if it was a thing where the Japanese were not treating Naomi right, were not doing, you know, things, I could understand.
Yeah.
But
because not to cut you, but that's kind of what he said. He was like, basically, yeah, the Japanese don't really give a damn about her. Like,
see, and when he said that in a clip, and I'm saying that's totally wrong. The reason why Osaka is the richest female athlete at the moment is because if you think about it, look at her sponsors.
Yeah,
the Japanese are paying her.
Mm.
If she was representing Haiti or if she was representing America, that was one of the things with Serena was the better player, yet Sharapova was getting more money than her.
But again, and this is where credit needs to go to Serena, because Serena kind of had to go through that so Osaka can now bear the fruits.
Exactly, so, and that is why the Williams sisters will always
100%. Yeah,
the goats, because for all women, but especially for the black women, because
that's not happening to any black athlete
without
again.
Them. 100%. You would not see a black athlete, a woman, female black athlete, earning that much like her. Or if we do, it's again we have to thank the Williams sisters, and then we have to thank Osaka. Do you get what I mean? But that's the thing. It's like when funny enough, I can't remember. I think it was her first match or something like that from this tournament where one of the commentators was mentioning how Osaka is huge in Japan, and apparently the Japanese people, when they have one athlete or one person that's doing well, their country fam, like they can't even walk. Do you get what I mean? So it's like she's royalty there. Do you get what I mean? So like she, and again, she's very close to her, to the Japanese people. Like she always talks about her culture, she always talks about, like, and that's what I love about Osaka, is that you get some of the Haiti, you get some of the stuff from Japan, you get some of the stuff even from America. Do you get what I mean? So I don't know, like it's not like she's never been ignorant about her black side.
Yeah,
never.
And that's something never. Shout out to like Charlemagne the God, who is on the breakfast, he's a like host on the Breakfast Club. He did say that she's very pro black, like she's
very pro black.
She knows, like she represents.
She barely even spoke for the Asian hate thing. She spoke more about Black Lives Matter than even the Asian hate thing.
No, she did post.
She did way more for the black. That's what I'm saying. So it's like, so that's why when, you know, when he now comes and says this, is like, fam, it's like, to me, it's like you're dismissing everything that she has done and everything that she's doing. Haiti probably don't even have a fucking tennis team. Who else do we know from that? Let's be honest.
But again, that was his argument as well. He was saying that basically because of like her stature, she can then create that.
She can't.
Lucy, but
not yet. She's not at a position where she can make that type of move yet.
She's kind of started though. Like her dad, I'm pretty sure they're in the process, or they built a school like in Haiti, and that's not.
But that's a foundation though. That's different.
Oh really?
I think if I'm correct, it's more of like a foundation. But even if it wasn't a foundation, let's say even like an academy, like a Patrick Way. Osaka still has...
Obviously, she's young. Like,
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So it's not like if it was a thing where she was, you know, she's done it all, blah, blah, blah. She's at the highest. She's even won an Olympic before, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And then you're saying that, I can understand a little bit.
Because, it sounds like I'm really siding with Dr. Umar here, like, but...
No, you are, but it's okay.
On the Olympic thing, and I've got something else to come back to you on as well. But on the Olympic thing, quickly, like... Just think how powerful that would have been if Naomi Osaka was representing Haiti at the Olympics. Like, I don't even know how many athletes Haiti will have competing at the Olympics full stop. Like,
and you're right, but it would still be as powerful as a black Japanese person.
And on that.
At the end of the day, when I tell my kids that Osaka won a gold medal, I'm not gonna say the Japanese. I'm gonna say that black girl won the gold medal.
On the same,
all of the other black people would do. You know, when we claim ours, we'll be claiming it like this.
You said how she gets a lot of love in Japan, which I'm sure that's the case. But like And this is just for me looking from an outsider's perspective. Like, say for instance, when she won Australia, there was very little like engagement from like the fellow Japanese players, apart from like Nishikori.
Yeah, that's
something that always like it kind of bothers me. Like,
but it isn't even just the Japanese. I think it was from everyone.
No, but I'm saying specifically. Obviously, there's a lot of haters, like in general. Like, but I'm speaking specifically from the Japanese perspective. Like, you want to see that kind of collective.
To be fair, at the beginning of her career, there were not really. It wasn't until she started winning. That is for sure. It wasn't until she started winning. That's when they started,
Lucy, I don't know, man. I want to see more. I'm sorry. I want to see more. Because, like, now she's literally a superstar. And like,
No. I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah.
Before, at the end of the day, they shouldn't have waited till she started winning to stand for her. But she had to work 100 times harder in order for the Japanese people to then take. Because at the end of the day, those Japanese people as well, she even said it at times that, you know, like, before in the past, how it was confusion because... the Japanese people were treating her a bit, you know, because she was black.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean? So, that's the thing, is that her or like a lot of other mixed people deal with this thing where they've always had to prove who the they two, are yeah, and stuff and caught between yeah. the two. Mm. Yeah. And it's like, fam, forget about all of this. Let's just appreciate and enjoy what she's offering us. Do you get what I mean? She's a fantastic player. It's been a while since we've been, you know, winning, like seeing someone winning back to back consistently Grand Slams like this. And I mean talking about us black people, we don't need to worry about, okay, who's the next black person going to take over? Because I'm not going to lie, I was scared as Serena was getting older. It was like, fam, who's my next black queen, you know, to come and take over? Stevens came. When Stevens won that's why when Stevens won that slam, it was everything, because it was like, fam, even when Serena is wrestling, there's some black woman out here winning.
Yeah.
Let's go. We have Steven, we have Osaka, and we're going to have many more people coming. So... Facts. Let's just appreciate the fact that, you know, we have another person who's dominating a white sport is a black woman. Mm-hmm. Period.
That's a nice way to close that argument. The next one, which was more positive, I guess. The what was it? Because you said you wanted to talk about the skincare line, the Kinlo.
Yes. So yeah. So Osaka has announced that she is launching a skin.
I loved your comments actually, like on her post with the bag, the money bag.
Money bags, honey, money bags. And I showed on my story and I was like, see, this is where we're going to put my kids into Project Osaka, because there is money into
Project
this
Osaka.
Shit.
So not Project Osaka.
Project Osaka. Man, forget that guy. It's Project Osaka.
I like that.
He's not winning that Osaka bag.
I like that.
So yeah, and apparently, like, you know, this skincare product is going to be great for us melanated skin.
What's it called? So. The name is quite nice. I quite like. Is it?
It's a nice. Yeah, I think it's like a Japanese
Kinlo or something.
Let me double check now. I think I follow it. Kinlo skin.
It's quite a nice name. But no, that's I like that. Like, she's branching out. Like, it's not just all about...
Exactly. And normally you get these type of things like way later.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that she's, you know, starting it now, you know. Hey, she's, you know, she's...
I'm pretty sure as well.
Getting that money.
There'll be competition. Well, I say competition. What's her name? She was meant to play today, but... American.
Who? Stevens.
Nah, Pegula, that's it. She also has a skincare, her own skincare line as well.
Anybody hear about it? Anybody know about it? Nobody know about it. I never heard of
her. I like Pegula, allow her.
I like her too, but this is Black Spin Global, honey. We do not know about her skincare.
But no, shout out to Osaka. The third thing, what is it you wanted to speak about on?
Oh, the third thing was the boyfriend.
Oh, YBN, Corday. Is it just Corday now? It's not YBN Corday, is it?
No, it's not YBN Corday, Corday anymore. It's just Corday. Yeah. It was, but to be fair, it was more on him than on her. To be fair, a lot of people were getting on to him.
His latest project.
Yeah, because he mentioned her tour. It was really good.
Decent. I love that opening. It was the opening track is hard.
I put you on Corday, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah, I did.
You did.
I did, yeah, because I used to listen to him before even him and Naomi were even together. I think that's why I kind of catched on early they were together and stuff. Because when they were posting pics together, not a lot of people kind of knew him that much or her. But yeah, his first album, which came out like 2 years ago, Grammy nominated. It was really, really, really good. And then this EP to, you know, promote his next thing was I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, it's nice to see her being with, you know, with someone from the culture, you know, and
again, something they said on the Breakfast Club, like she's very much, she goes out of like a rapper, like she represents the culture very well. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Again, another reason why I'm so happy that a sister's taken over the tents, you know, it's nice to keep tennis in the black culture, you know, somewhere, somehow.
What were the lines people were going mad over? Because
there was two lines. There was one where it was about how he was saying, yeah, my girls are tennis, you guys are tennis. Everyone was upset, and I'm like, you know what, guys, I totally understand, but first of all, there are 1,000 rappers saying things that are way worse.
Yeah, completely.
Like, I don't think you understand, there's some rap songs that I've heard and I'm like, and I'm a huge hip-hop and rap fan, like I am, and that's why it's weird for me sometimes when I listen to certain songs, I'm like, cool, and the things I love, old school rap, which was even,
oh man,
fam, Snoop Dogg's Doggy,
some of that West Coast stuff,
was Doggy Style. You know what I'm saying, I love West, and they were the most disrespectful people on earth.
No.
So there was that. There was the other one, which that one that people were exaggerating, which in my opinion, which was the one where he was saying that, you know, my girl will forfeit a tennis match just to meet my grandmother.
Yeah.
And people were going crazy.
Yeah, that was a nice line. I think
it was a beautiful, people were not seeing that he was basically like exaggerating the thing. This was a way of him saying, she's got my back.
Yeah.
The same way, people might not know the story, people might do, she shared it before during the US Open last year when doing in a bubble, she was saying she told him that she was feeling really lonely, he dropped everything, he flew to New York, he self-isolated in a hotel for a couple of days and then stayed with her.
Young love that.
So it's like, you know, like people, like he was, you know, people were focusing too much on exactly what he was saying rather than just, you know, and I was like, damn, like rappers actually can't exaggerate anymore. And it's like, you know, like, come on. But I think people took it as a way of, she's going to leave her, like, you know, she's not going to focus on her career. She's going to focus on him, where this is someone who's been winning a slam for like 4 years straight. So it's not like she's actually dropping, like, relax. Like she's good. He's good. You know, they're both two very focused people. And they're young, and they just had, like, people just need to relax, fam. These are the people who are arguing were older than them. That's what you should be ashamed of.
Exactly.
These are two young people.
That's what makes me laugh. Like, when I see these, like, debates happening on Twitter, I'm like, you don't know how sad.
Yo, they were slandering Corday for like 2 days straight.
But anyway, yeah, that
was actually too funny.
That wraps up our roundup. Slightly extended with Naomi Osaka.
Slightly extended, yeah. The lady. Yeah, you know, we're gonna
be talking about her a bit later on again as well. But yeah, next up, we've got an exclusive interview with Alicia Parks. And it's Alicia, not Alicia. So that's the correct pronunciation. Oh, yeah, so okay. I've got that from the dad. So Michael, he confirmed, because I was like, listen, just to be clear, the commentators are saying Alicia, and he basically said, that's it's spelt that way because my mum was trying to be fancy, like it's actually Alicia. I was like, that's too funny. But yeah, it's Alicia Parks. And yeah, it was a great interview. So we posted about this during the week, so yeah, you kind of should know it's coming. But it was a great chat with both Alicia and her dad. So again, shouts out to Alicia, and thank you, Michael. And again, a special shout out to Jeremy, who's a coach in Florida, I think Boca Raton. He was the one that like connected us. So yeah, shouts out to Jeremy. He's a follower on Instagram. So yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this interview. And again, thanks for your time, Alicia and Michael. I understand you moved from Atlanta to Florida. Is it when Alicia was 9 years old, or was it a bit earlier than that?
Yes, she was, nine, just turning nine.
And like, what was the reasoning behind that? Because I understand Alicia, you have an older sister as well. Is it Michaela?
Yes.
So were they both playing tennis at the time, or?
Yeah, both of them was playing, and we had a couple of people watch them play, and I didn't know tennis was that serious, you know, from coming from basketball in North Carolina. But then they started turning us on to the USTA and Nick Bollettieri and Rick Macy. So we had choices to make, and so we end up, you know, going, moving down to Florida after we talked to Patrick McEnroe.
So did you watch much tennis, like, when, like, Alicia and Mikaela were kids then, or was it something you were kind of, like, fairly freshly introduced into?
Well, I was kind of freshly introduced, but, of course, everybody knew Venus and Serena, you know.
Yeah.
So I will follow them when they was playing.
And as things stand right now, so you're currently Alicia's coach, and, like, there are quite a few. When we spoke last week, you kind of mentioned, you know, Coco Gauff and Corey, who's also your friend, and you just mentioned, obviously, the Williams sisters. So this whole idea of, like, the father coach role, like, it's quite popular in this day and age. Like, if you can talk a bit about, like, yeah, your role as a father plus as a coach as well.
Well, I think really when it comes to the father, when you look at the pro circuit, most of the parents are the coach of the kids. Of course, you need things from the USTA, you know what I'm saying, and the coaches there. We've always been in player development. But I still think if you can coach, like Corey is a good coach for Coco, as well as the other coaches, I just think that's great because a lot of people, nobody knows their kids like you do.
Yeah. So
and that's,
would you say you've kind of followed any kind of particular blueprints, or are you just kind of like, just kind of going along with the flow pretty much?
Well, I pretty much went on with the flow because being a basketball player myself out of North Carolina, you know, we take basketball serious and we kind of got a jump on most coaches because North Carolina is big with basketball.
Yeah, D1.
So it kind of taught you how to be good and understand sports.
Okay. You know, so your background is basketball.
Yes.
So you play, was that college basketball for North Carolina?
Yeah, I played at Anderson, and I was signed to go to Clemson. Then I played in the USBL for a while.
Oh, fantastic. So you pretty much played pro level basketball then?
Yes.
So that's your background in terms of, like, sports. Like, how do the two sports, like, kind of match up? Obviously, tennis is a, you know, individual sport, basketball being a team sport, but would you say you've kind of taken, like, your kind of background in basketball and tried to implement certain aspects into, like, Alicia's game?
Yes. I mean, you know, even to come into the step and slide, like the shuffle step, to play defense and things like that, I understood how balance was. That's one reason a serve is like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of coaches don't have that background. But when you understand the balance of a serve or the balance of stroke a ball, it's totally different. And I think that came, basketball had a lot to do with that, because even shooting a jump shot, you know you have to be squared up. So that's where I got that from, far as teaching her the way I taught her.
Were you ever tempted to make it?
And of course, I got to give a lot of credit to my man, Rick Macy. Rick Macy, that worked with Venus and Serena at one time, I didn't know anything about tennis for his technique. But then what I ended up doing, Rick took time to call me to the side and show me what to do with Alicia. And that helped me out a lot when it came to technique.
Fantastic. So, yeah, would you say again, like, were you not tempted to maybe push Alicia into, like, basketball in terms of, like, because obviously WNBA is quite big in America. Was that never really an option?
Well, you ought to see that jump shot. No, seriously, she can really play. She was always good at every sport, both of my kids. Any sport they played. Mikaela just started growing at 5'3". And, you know, I'm a big believer in you have to do what you want to do. And when it came to Alicia, I asked her about swimming. She could swim. She could do shoot basketball, anything. But I asked her one time, I said, what do you want to do? and she wanted to play tennis. And I think that's the start of everything when you get ready to play a sport. You have to want to do it, not the parents.
Yeah, no, that's sound advice. I love that. And yeah, just talk a bit about, you kind of touched on it briefly. So like your experiences so far, like on the tour. So it's been mostly the ITF circuit as to date. Like how have you found that experience of like basically, yeah, kind of traveling the rounds? Like, cause obviously you played a lot of tournaments in America. Like what's the scene like in terms of like being, well, yeah, like being an up and coming tennis player in the States? If you can talk on that, Michael, first.
It's different. You know, it's really different. I'm proud of Alicia for being tough and play it, because it is still some boundaries there. You know what I'm saying? It's tough. You know, there's not that many black young ladies or color on the circuit. And so it's tough, but there's some good kids out there, good young ladies that you mingle with and get to. It's different. It's not a basketball. It's not a football. You know, so once you learn it, you can kind of take off, especially with your talent.
Yeah. You spoke a bit about it. Sorry, again. You were going to say something.
Yeah, it's different. But you get the time you get to really know the sport and know what it takes and what roles to take is great. Because I can tell you, the ITF, it's a challenge. It's a challenge, but you got to be tough when you play it. Yeah. WTA, when we played the WTA last week, it makes you really thrive to go in and do what you need to do to get to the WTA, because they take care of you. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, which we'll talk about in a bit later on. Again, you touched on it as well about the USTA. Like, how have you found, have they been of much help, like in kind of Alicia's development, like over the years, or do you think, is there more they can be doing, or are you happy with like what they've kind of done so far?
I really, you know, I kind of held Alicia back because she's over 6 feet when she was in player development, because being an athlete, I know we wouldn't be sitting here talking today if I would have let her go and play so much like that, because her knees growing to be that tall. See, a lot of girls are smaller. They don't have that problem. My other daughter didn't have that problem. But I let Alicia grow strong. And that's why I'm releasing, turning her loose now. Because, like I said, go back to North Carolina, we really understand the basics of developing and letting the body get strong. And that's the best thing that you could do. And the USTA, like you said, what I like about what they've done, because they could have really pushes to the side and didn't understand it, but I think they do understand it. And they gave us, they there if we needed them to a certain extent. You know, I think we could have got more, but hey, yeah. If you got the talent, you got God, you can't be stopped.
No, indeed, indeed. And just lastly, like, so what are like maybe some of your short-term and long-term goals, like for Alicia, like looking ahead pretty much?
Well, right now, I'm really, we're getting ready to turn her loose now. Because what I was doing, I waited till she got 18. And the pandemic hit, of course, last year when she was 19.
Of course, yeah.
And of course, I don't know if you saw it, but when she came back at the end of the year, she won that title. At the three tournaments, she won the title. So she was right on time for what I wanted her to do. Now I'm getting ready to turn her loose, you know, and let her do her thing and just run up. So the short term is we getting on up there and trying to break through the top 100, and then we just go from there.
Fantastic.
You know?
Brilliant. But yeah, that's all I really need from you, Michael. Fantastic. So thank you again for like, yeah, sharing your time. Now, Alicia, to you. So just like some quick fire questions, first and foremost, like, don't worry, like, you're not in the hot seat, so like, don't worry, it's fine. So like, yeah, favorite players to watch, like, growing up?
Serena and Venus Williams.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like, favorite players to watch today, like, do you watch much tennis today? I take it you probably do.
I like watching Osaka, Serena. Yeah, those two players.
Okay. Your favorite surface?
Hard court.
hard, okay. Even though you got some pretty good results on the clay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, clay court may be my new favorite. I don't know.
Okay. favorite meal pre-match and post-match?
Are you talking like breakfast, lunch, dinner?
So before you go on to court, like you've got a match at, let's say, I don't know, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. What are you gonna eat beforehand?
Grilled chicken, vegetables, and maybe some fruit. Yeah.
And then a post-match meal. Maybe you've just won a match. You've just beaten someone. Love and love. You're buzzing.
pasta.
Okay, that would good recovery food. We'll probably come back to this, but just if you can maybe talk about like your most memorable moment, like in tennis so far. Obviously, you're still very young, but like what has been a moment that's like kind of lived long in the memory, like to date?
Probably when I played the 250. When I went 4 rounds there, yeah. That was kind of like the high.
Which we'll talk. We'll talk about it soon. And then, sorry, you're going to say something else?
Yeah, and probably when I played Flipkins and Vegas.
We'll talk about that too, the top 100 win. And away from the court, like, what do you like to do? Like, to kind of just, like, relax and maybe, like, unwind?
I like to cook. I like to skate, hang out with my sister, work out, play with my dogs.
So you cook?
Yes.
What's like, a go-to meal for you? Like, what are you cooking?
I want to try lamb chops next. That'll probably be my favorite meal to cook.
I love lamb. That's great. And like music, what kind of music are you listening to at the moment? Like what's on the playlist?
R&B, hip hop. I can't really name the songs right now.
I was gonna say you can't name any artists, no?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. So yeah, like now getting into like the nitty gritty of the conversation. So you turned pro. I say you turned pro. Your first tournament on the ITF tour was in 2017.
Yes.
And I think you played. You're playing a lot of qualifying events, and then I think it was your third tournament in. You came through qualifying. It was in Orlando. And yeah, I think Mary Bushkova went on to win that tournament. Do you remember much about that event? Like, it was back in 2017. I know it's a while away now, but
yeah, I don't remember.
You don't? Okay. What about your first top 500 win? So that was against a Canadian, Julia Elbauba, and she was ranked 441 in the world, and you beat her 6-1, 6-1. Do you remember?
Yes.
Do you remember much about that? Like, can you talk a bit about that? Like, how that felt?
I know I played her twice. I don't really remember the first time I played her too much about that match, but
because that was a 6-1, 6-1 victory, and that was pretty comprehensive considering she was top 500 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, how did that kind of make you feel? Like,
it felt good because I was having a tough. Process of getting to getting a ranking.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And your dad kind of alluded to it as well, like how you've been grinding like the long way in terms of like playing qualifying and, you know, kind of really working your way up. And I want to say it was in, again, still in 2018 actually now. You took Victoria Duval, who was 229th in the world. You took her to 3 sets in Waco, Texas. Do you remember much about that match?
I don't.
Don't.
Wait, what was the name?
Victoria Duval.
Yeah, Victoria Duval.
Oh, I kind of remember it. I don't really remember too much about that match.
Because that you'd beaten Elbauba before that, and then you met Duval in that following match, and yeah, you lost in 3 sets, but it was a tough, it was like a closely contested 3-set match, and like I said, obviously Duval was 229 in the world at the time, so again, kind of showing your level in terms of like you're competing against these players like much more highly ranked than you are. So you graduated high school in 2019. Was it ever an option for you to go to college, or didn't you want to go to college? Like, it was just literally, I'm going to pursue, you know, being pro, like chasing this dream of being a pro tennis player.
Yes, I had several offers to college, but I chose the pro route because I always wanted to play pro. So.
What colleges did you receive offers from?
UCLA, Georgia Tech, NC State, Duke, wow. Carolina, Washington. Yeah. Go on.
So all D1 schools.
Yes.
That's fantastic. And yeah, again, so 2019, it kind of was like a breakthrough year in some ways. So by this point, your ranking is inside the top 800. And you're entering like bigger events, you're kind of bypassing qualifying.
Yes.
You took out Ellen Perez. She was 222 in the world. You took her out in three sets. In Charleston. Do you remember much about that?
Yes, that was actually my first main draw win.
So yeah, talk a bit about that. Like, how did that make you feel?
It felt good. I remember my mom sitting there on the bleachers and she always told me to keep working. You're going to get the first round main draw. And I don't know. I just remember when I won the last point, it was like a big relief. So... yeah,
because 2019 in many ways that was like kind of your breakout year. Like, you reached two finals. So is it Shreveport and then Reading?
Yes.
Like, how, in terms of like that level of competing, did you kind of feel that this is kind of where I'm at, and like I kind of know I can basically, you know, surpass this level like in the future? Or was it just basically if you could talk about like how that kind of felt for you like at that time?
Shreveport, that was my first final. I mean, I knew I was on that level, but it did take time to get there. So I just felt like I belonged there in WTA. So.
Yeah. And then Reading was the same pretty much.
Yes.
And then... your first, you kind of touched on earlier, your first top 100 win came against Kirsten Flipkins. And that was three sets in Las Vegas. So
yeah.
I think at the time you were ranked 410 in the world, which is a pretty massive jump in terms of like beating someone in the top 100. Like, how much confidence did that kind of give you like after that win?
It gave me a lot of confidence. I qualified, and then I looked at the draw, and it said I had to play number one seed. But seeds never mattered to me, because when you eat a seed, you always spit it out anyway.
I like that.
And it was on center court, so it was kind of like a big stage for me to perform, which helped me.
Would you say you kind of like the kind of, well, yeah, playing the big moment matches? Like, is that something you kind of, rise up to, basically? Fantastic. And then 2020, like, that again, another breakthrough year for you, but also that was the year of this whole COVID pandemic. By this time you're ranked inside the top 400, entering higher grade events. I saw that you lost to Robin Montgomery in March, and I think that was in Vegas. But then later on, you'd get your revenge later on in the year, which we'll talk about in a bit. But if you could just talk a bit about like 2020, like this whole pandemic year, like, and how you kind of dealt with like being locked down, and like, what did you do like during that time, like away from playing tennis, basically, or competing pretty much?
Well, I have courts in my subdivision, so the courts were never locked down for me. I just focused on training, what I needed to work on, to when the tour did start back, I would be prepared for it. So
So would you say the time off maybe helped you then in some ways, or?
Yes, it helped. ESPN. And I also played the ESPN exhibition for 4 months on clay, so that's probably where I'm getting the wins off clay.
Oh, interesting.
So I played a 16-week exhibition matches, which was 4 months, and that helped me a lot.
Because I didn't know that was a thing in terms of like the ESPN exhibition. What other kind of players were competing in that? Like anyone of note or?
500 and below. Yeah.
Okay. So. That's good. So that kind of just kept you in there in terms of like keeping you match sharp.
Yes.
And like you said, that was all on clay as well. So hence why the results came on clay.
Yes.
So I don't think you didn't compete again until October of 2020. And yeah, that kind of, like I said, that's when things start to kind of kick off for you in terms of leading up to November and your win in Orlando. Again, that's probably been your biggest like moment or one of your biggest moments to date, because you came through qualifying in Orlando, which is a 25K event. Mm-hmm. And then you ended up winning the whole thing. And again, you beat Montgomery in that final in three sets. So if you can like take us back to like that week, basically, and like, yeah, how just your kind of mindset, like obviously, like I said, this is like in the middle of a pandemic. But yeah, you're out here competing and like, yeah, like you came through qualifying, winning the tournament. Like what was going through your mind?
Well, my sister traveled with me to that tournament, so that helped because she doesn't really come to my tournaments because of school and stuff.
Nice.
And I just remember going to sleep early, eating the same breakfast every day, keeping the same routine, warming up with the same person every day. And then I was in the finals, and I was like, I've been through the finals twice, but the third time is always a charm, so yeah.
Because I was going to say, would you say you're quite superstitious then if you're doing the same things like every day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think most tennis players are, but then some don't like to admit it. Do you think that's fair?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, that was your first, like you said, that was your first title, but after reaching three finals. So like you said, third time lucky. And then obviously since then, you've kind of, yeah, you've gone on to do great things. You also won the doubles at that event with, is it Rashida McAdoo?
Yes.
So yeah, if you could talk a bit about that as well, like in terms of like doubles, like is doubles something that's quite important to you? Like, even though you are predominantly a singles player, but do you feel like it kind of supplements your game playing doubles as well as singles?
Yes. I really like playing with Rashida. Through that week, she helped me warm up. She was there to tell me what I was doing wrong and stuff was kind of off.
Because yeah. it's quite common now. Like you're getting a lot of like the top like ladies on the tour. You still there?
Oh gosh. Okay.
Yeah, it's quite common. Like you're getting quite a lot of the top singles players like in women's tennis playing doubles as well. And obviously Coco, someone obviously you know quite well, like she's a pretty good doubles player, plays with Cassie McNally. I think it was Barty, she just won in Stuttgart. So she won the singles event and the doubles event. Like, do you see yourself basically competing in both singles and doubles at events, or do you think you'll just basically see how it goes?
I see myself competing in both.
Yeah. That's good to hear. And yeah, now fast forward to 2021. I say fast forward. We're in 2021 now. So you're currently ranked, is it 276 or 75 in the world?
I think 275.
275. Yeah. And yeah, that was after like your biggest breakthrough to date in Charleston. I want to talk a bit about the Volvo Car Open first, because you played qualifying there. I think you won one round of qualifying and then lost in the final round. But am I right in saying that was your first WTA 500 event? Like, talk a bit about that experience and like, yeah, what it was like to kind of be in that environment.
The environment, it was kind of like, that's where I belong. The first round, I mean, I obviously played the girl before, but I knew in the back of my head what I had to do to win that match. So yeah, I think I belong there.
And also again, so like I said, you're unlucky to not make it through qualifying at the Volvo Car Open, but you stuck around for the, it's a mouthful, MUSC Health Women's Open. And that was obviously the following week. So that was the WTA 250 event. You came through qualifying in that. Again, you beat players ranked above you. And that was the first time me seeing you. Like, I've never seen you play before that week, and I was very impressed, which we'll talk about in a bit. But again, like, that, how did that feel to kind of come through qualifying at a WTA event, and then obviously I think you played Grace Min in the first round. Was that your first win against Min, or had you beaten
her?
Because you'd lost her previously, twice, I think, in the ITF circuit. But yeah, you beat her like pretty handedly. Like, what was your mindset going into that match? Obviously, you'd be a losing record. Like, were you at all kind of like nervous or?
No, I wasn't nervous. I was like anxious to play.
Yeah.
Because I could tell the week before how I was practicing, how I was going to play in my matches. So, yeah.
Did you sense maybe that she was a bit nervous? Because obviously she came through qualifying as well, like yourself. Or was that not really an issue?
I don't think so, no.
No. And then it was Uns Jabeur in the second round. Like, very unlucky to get the top seed in the second round. You must have looked at that draw and thought, what the hell is this? But I don't know, like, what was kind of going through your mind when you saw the draw, basically, and like, yeah, basically potentially you could be playing, and you did, playing the top seed in the second round?
Well, I was ready for her. I mean, it was on center court, so I was just take that match, put it in the back of my head, and then when I play her next time, then I know what to do. So,
because you started really well. Like, I think you were 4-2 up in that first set. And that's what I'm saying. I was talking to my colleague about like the match, basically, and I just said that how you looked like you pretty much had played like WTA literally for years. Like, you looked like an experienced WTA tour player. Just the way you kind of carried yourself around the court, like the serve, like your massive serve. Your dad spoke about the big serve. Like, you pretty much gave Jabeur a lot of problems in that first set. Was that something, again, you kind of maybe thought to yourself, you know what, I'm only here to, like, I've got nothing to lose. Like, I'm literally just here to play my game. Like, what was your kind of, yeah, again, what was your mindset like going into that match? And like, when you were playing, what do you remember kind of thinking like on the court?
Well, when I got on the court, I didn't have anything to lose. And I don't know. I didn't come through on top of the match because I also got a COVID shot.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, like, Friday?
Yeah, you would have left it. I mean, you would have waited. That's the bad thing about getting in.
So you've had the vaccine then already?
Yes.
So we have another one, or was it just the one you need?
Just the one.
Oh, that's good. That's fantastic. And what about your dad? Has he been vaccinated?
Yes.
Oh, that's great, because obviously you need to kind of be fully vaccinated if you're going to be traveling around and stuff. So that's really good to hear. So you're saying the vaccine, maybe, or the vaccine shot maybe played a kind of role in your feeling during the match?
Mm-hmm. If I would have known I was going to get into the next tournament, then I would have waited to take the shot. So.
Oh, interesting. Fantastic. Well, again, like, you must be hungry to kind of be playing more WTA events, like, considering, obviously, like I said, the experience in Charleston. Like, where do you kind of see your game, like, again, short-term, long-term goals? Like, where do you see your game, let's say, April now, let's say like June time, June, July, like where do you see your kind of ranking and like your game being at that point?
Well, I see my ranking being in the hundreds, top 100 by that time. So, yeah.
Yeah. So again, thanks a lot for your time, Alicia and Michael. Now friends of the pod, as we do, like, when we interview people on the pod, they become friends of the pod. So yeah, be sure to keep an eye on Alicia, who actually did quite well last week, actually, in, I think it was Charlottesville. She got to the quarterfinals, and that was a 60K event, an ITF event, in Charlottesville, Virginia. So she's doing her thing, man. Like, she's just plugging away, and she's got big, big aspirations to, like, crack the top 100. So we should be seeing her very soon, like, regularly competing on the WTA tour. So yeah, wrapping up now, Lucy, the Madrid Open, which is currently happening. It's mad because obviously we're recording this on a Sunday, so we literally just saw Osaka lose this morning to Karolina Muchova in three sets. So that kind of ends like our kind of involvement.
I don't even know what
women's side. It's kind of mad.
I don't even know what it is.
It's kind of
never
mad.
Heard of it. I don't watch tennis.
So we had Goff, Venus, and Keys all go out in the first round. I thought Goff played very well against Pliskova.
Goff deserved credit for that match because she really made Pliskova work. Very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
That she made it. I think Pliskova underestimated. And she was just like,
because Push,
and I think that's why at the end she was like, no, let me wrap this up. I literally feel like that's what it was. She really made her work.
Yeah,
she
100%. Really made her work. And she's not a flaky player. That's probably the wrong term. But like, yeah, she's streaky, as in Pliskova. Like, so she has streaks, like crazy talent.
Yeah,
she's top 10,
crazy.
Like,
she's very. I really like Pliskova's game. Like, she's really good. It's just that
mad inconsistent. Like,
yeah, very.
And sometimes
very.
As well, it's like she doesn't care. Like you said. But Coco kind of made her like wake up, I guess.
Exactly. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
100%. I think that's what it was. Anyone that watched that match, I feel like Coco should be really proud of herself because, again, she's not like a lot of the people that she's playing against are very, you know, experienced, you know, people. I mean, Pliskova made it like what? She made it like what, semifinals of the Australian Open or something like that, or quarterfinals, I can't remember. But like, anyways, like, you know, she before COVID, I remember she was on a winning streak, like she was winning tournaments and stuff. It's just that when she got to Grand Slam, she was losing a bit. So, but yeah, I was really proud of Coco. Again, me, I've always said it before, I'm always gonna say it, you know, like, she's young, so honestly,
17.
She's always...
that was her debut as well in Madrid, like, and to get that in the first round, that's kind of mad. So the sixth seed.
She took a top player in the three sets and made her extremely uncomfortable. So she should be proud of herself, man.
Just on the first round defeat. So yeah, Venus. So she was a wild card. I'm surprised she was even playing, considering Serena's not. Like, I mean, you all know why Serena's not playing. I don't know how you felt about that, because I was shocked to see Venus.
It isn't the first time.
True. Yeah.
This has happened where Serena has boycotted
and Venus has played. Yeah, you're right.
Do you know what? The thing is, I feel like Venus generally does not care about what's going on around, and she's just playing.
Yeah, it's true.
She just packs her bag and just go. I just feel like she just keeps going. I don't think she really cares about what's actually really... Like, even if you watch her thingy, what's it called? Oh, what's it? My mind just went blank.
IG.
When players have their conference, you watch your conference, Venus, her replies are like, it's like, yeah.
Been here, done that.
Like, she's been doing this for years. Yeah. For her, it's just like, let me just play as much as I can. And then when I'm really fed up with this, then I will, you know.
Because she lost to Brady, Jen Brady, who was the 11th seed. And again, that's a tough draw.
And it's Brady.
First round.
You know. There was I don't know if you saw it, there was a very nice like 27 shot, I think.
Rally, Venus, she played quite well. The score was, I think it was 6-2, 6-4. That was the score in the end.
It was
closer than that. Like,
yeah, no, she played really well. And Brady even, you know, shouted her out saying,
yeah, I like the tweet she posted
played,
after.
Played against the legend something, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So as long as you guys give your credits,
straight
that's
up.
All good.
And then Madison Keys as well, she also lost in the first round. So she got Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova. Again, that's a tough draw. Like, Pavlyuchenkova's a good player. Like, yeah, and then Keys is still struggling for match. I think she's just struggling for match sharpness, considering she's had a slow start to the year. She missed the Australian Open because of COVID.
Like, yeah, she didn't play that much last year.
She's still working her way in, basically. So
yeah. I think she just needs to get that rhythm back.
That's exactly it.
Because after not playing, 100%. After not playing for so long, and then having this COVID situation at the start of her season, it wasn't too
100%.
Great. So I think she just needs to. I just wanted to focus more on getting her rhythm back and then focusing on winning and stuff. Yeah. Because if not, it's just going to be too much for her.
And then Sloane. So Sloane Stephens, she won her first round match against Danka Kovnik or Kovnich. Mm-hmm. And she was supposed to play Garbin Muguruza, but she pulled out. And I was thinking to myself, oh, damn, like, is this like a sign? Like, are we... Are the gods working in Stephen's favor here? Like,
because I was not ready to watch that match. I was just like, oh, I was ready.
To be honest, yeah. So
it would have been a good match.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It would have it would have been too intense.
In terms of form, Muguruza would have won. Well, form suggests Muguruza would have won just because she's played them all.
But people underestimate Stephen's skills on clay.
And this is the thing. You know, and
she's very good on clay. She was a finalist in French Open.
Exactly.
She's won one of, what was it, Miami Open, was it? She won Miami Open before. Like, she's very good on clay. Mm. She plays very well on clay. So, yeah, that's what I was really excited about. The first round of the women's draw.
A lot of bangers, definitely. Yeah.
Honestly, I felt like I was in a fourth round. So I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, it was really good. It was really, really good. I was really impressed. So, but she had to pull out.
Yeah, but then Sloane, she met Ons Jabeur in the second round. And that was three sets. And that was on the Saturday. And that was I enjoyed that match because both players looked like they were
they were playing really good.
Like,
Jabeur and her fucking drop. I was like, she was annoying my spirit. Like, no, she was annoying my spirit only because it was really good. But obviously, I wanted Stephens to win, so that's why I was fucking annoyed. I was like, oh, this is great, but stop it. Like, she was just there, like, pew, pew.
There was I just thought the energy from both of them was really good. Like, and you can tell they respected.
Yeah, each other. I knew it was going to be a very good match.
Yeah,
they looked like they were really cool because there was one point where Stephens she was stuck like on the net.
I'm going to send you the picture after this. It's too funny. I was going to post it, but I was like, I don't want to like embarrass her, but it's a great picture.
But anyone who watched the match or seen the picture know what I'm talking about. And her and Jabeur, like, you know, they were like, it was that very friendly.
Exactly.
But, you know, it wasn't like a fake friendly. Yeah. It was a real friendly interaction.
Applauding each other.
It was a very good...
Like you said, Ons Jabeur hitting drop shots after drop shot. Like, Sloane was applauding, like, a lot of...
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I loved seeing
it was
that.
It was a very good match. It was a good match, but, yeah, I'm just happy that, you know, she looked very comfortable. She looked like she was enjoying to play. I think clay is where she's really going to...
Oh, it's her vibe, definitely, yeah. Clay is definitely
Vibe, 100%. I'm just hoping that she just continues and just, you know, it's nice seeing Stephens like this.
I posted something on the socials about like the energy, like it's just there's a lot of positive energy like around Stephens at the moment, and a lot of that is down to Darien King because she has officially split with Kamal Murray, her previous coach.
Is that official?
Yeah. So
again,
exactly. So Darien King, he's actually a pro himself, so he plays most of his tennis on like the challenger circuit. So he's from he's from Barbados. I think he's like top 300. He started traveling with Sloane in Charleston, and obviously now he was with her in Madrid. So I think he's literally going to be like traveling with her now, like for the rest of the year. Which again is great to see. Like obviously another black guy like in the box in terms of like the players' box. Like
100%
representation 100%. Is very much so needed. It's like really needed. But yeah, I just think it's just good to see Sloane Stephens playing good tennis, man. Like, she's such a talent.
Definitely.
And yeah, Osaka, like we've kind of alluded to, losing to Mukova. So her first round was against Naoya Hibino, fellow Japanese, and that was straight sets.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Mukova match, like, wasn't that surprised. Like we kind of said, like, Mukova played, she pretty much grew up on clay. Like, so Osaka's still finding her feet. And in that second set...
But it's not even just that. They've had tough matches
in Cincinnati, the Western and Southern Open before the US Open last year, that was also a three-set match. Osaka did win that, but it was a high-quality match. It was a proper battle.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing I've got to say, though, Osaka, those trainers, damn, absolutely
love... Everyone's loving them.
Absolutely love those trainers. So I'm gonna miss the trainers more than I'm joking.
Oh, by the way, American listeners, that's sneakers.
I was going to go, or shoes. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever. Yeah,
the shoes, the sneakers.
That purple is a beautiful color, man. But yeah, I'm not that worried about Osaka. Like, she tweeted after the match,
Well, she was like, yeah, took an L. I was like, fam, relax.
I like that though. Like showing that she's not mad. Like, and I think in her post match press conference, she basically said, she wants to learn how to play like Mukova on the clay. Like, so she's acknowledging the fact.
Mukova was playing. Yeah, they were playing really well, but Mukova was on fire. Yeah. Like, she was not. Yeah, she was not playing around. Like, she was really on. Like, she was on job.
Straight up. So yeah, that wraps up the women. Unfortunately, nobody from a black spin global perspective playing in the women's draw as we record this. On the men's side now, again, it's only one, so we've only got Felix. So Francis Tiafoe, he played qualifying, but he did lose in the first round of qualifying, unfortunately, to Marco Cicconato.
To a Spanish don.
No, no, it was Italian. Italian
Don, Cicconato, yeah, that's it, yeah.
And again, exactly, pretty much he's a clay court player, Cicconato. Yeah, so man. Not the biggest of shocks, but I did kind of feel for Francis because he's been putting in a lot of work.
I feel like he's been playing like every
single
match that there is.
Slight brag, and spoke to him after. he said he plans to play Rome qualifying, which will be... That'll probably start on Friday or Saturday. And then, yeah, I think he'll be playing one of the 250s.
Wait, Rome is coming back?
Yeah, Rome's literally next week. So after this, okay. It's Rome. It's mad.
It's coming quickly. Yeah. Wimbledon, I'm smelling you. Can't wait for it. Like, literally, I don't think you understand how excited and impatient I am for Wimbledon. Like, I might even book some days off work. I'm not going to lie to you.
I hear you. But yeah, so that wraps up. Felix, he has Casper Ruud. So Felix was seeded 15th. And yeah, he takes on Casper Ruud, which again, that's not going to be easy because Ruud, he made it to the... He got to the semi-finals in Monte Carlo a couple of weeks ago. So he's in good form, like on the clay. Like, Felix can't catch a break with these draws, man. It's kind of crazy. Like,
yeah,
it's quite annoying, but...
I feel like they're giving a lot of time.
So yeah, and just before we wrap, actually, there is an event happening in France. I'm gonna butcher this name. So it's the Le Open. Basically, it's in Saint Malo.
Saint-Marlo.
Yeah. So. This is so bad. Le Open 35. I don't know how you say 35 in French. Saint-Marlo. Maybe you should have read this out instead. Like, shit.
Wait, what was it?
So just go on the WTA website. And then yeah, just go to tournaments and then you should see it because it's live. Like, it's currently being played.
Nah, if you guys see the way it's...
We're going to cut this. So, Lucy, if you could just...
No,
we're cutting this. There's no way I'm embarrassing myself like this. So, yeah, if Lucy could...
You know what? You didn't do too bad. It's just that I was a bit confused with the Le Open. But anyways, yeah. Is L'Open 35 de Saint-Malo.
Okay, that's it. So in that draw, we've got Jasmine Paolini playing. She's drawn against a French up-and-coming again. You can probably say her name better than I can. Elsa Giacomeau. I think that's how you say her name. So she's an upcoming junior. I want to say she won the French Open Juniors last year. But yeah, that's who Paolini has in the first round, so that should be interesting. And obviously that's a clay court event in France, so good luck to Paolini in Saint-Malo. Is that right? Is that how you say it?
Saint-Malo, yeah. I was more confused on the Le Open. Okay,
Forget the Le Open. Like... Forget that. I didn't say that. Forget it. So yeah, guys, that wraps up this latest episode. So again, appreciate you all for tuning in. And again, big shout out to Alicia and her dad, Michael, for giving us their time. So yeah, guys, until next time, take care and enjoy the tennis that's currently on.